Assalamualaikum dan salam sejahtera. Agenda awal ni saya di studio awal ni Bukit Kuangan Kuala Lumpur. Dan saya ingin mengucapkan selamat tahun baru, Luna, kepada semua yang belum lagi sempat saya ucapkan itu. Ini kali pertama saya kembali secara langsung selepas sekian lama. Dan malam ini, saya ingin terbang kembali bukan secara fizikal tetapi secara diskusi. Melihat ke satu kawasan yang letaknya di kawasan yang ramai daripada kita kenali sejak di bangku sekolah lagi sebagai laluan sutera darat, the Silk Road. Dan di situ kita tahu sejarah peradaban Islam itu ada banyak pemikirnya, ada banyak orang yang terkenal dengan pelbagai ilmu. Dan Urumqi adalah satu nama yang cukup-cukup dikenali di Malaysia kalau mereka yang belajar sejarah dan tamadun Islam. Cuma hari ini saya ingin minta izin untuk berbicara dalam bahasa Inggeris. Dalam arti kata itu kerana saya ada seorang tamu buat kali pertama dalam sejarah kerjaya saya. Our brother from East Turkestan, or known as Xinjiang by the Chinese government, Saudara Abdul Salam Alim. Thank you so much for making time to be here. Pleasure. I want to go really clear with the audience of Agenda One tonight. Usually I would have two sides to a story, and we know the Chinese government have their official story of Xinjiang. You have your own personal and professional view of the situation. For tonight, we tried, but we couldn't get anyone from the Chinese embassy to be here. But after the break, I'm going to give about 2 to 3 minutes to a spokesperson from the Chinese embassy to give their views. But before that, I would like for us to go back a bit in time and for you to remember your childhood and how it was like in East Turkestan.
Yes, I was born in East Turkestan, which is just like probably you mentioned the name of Urumqi, which is now the capital city of East Turkestan, so-called Xinjiang. That's just 25 kilometers away. It's a small village, Kutbi, known as Kutbi. I was born there. Again, that's not my original city of my parents, actually. Okay. My parents being sent to a kind of exile during that time. That was still the Cultural Revolution was taking place all over China, and people were suffering. There was no freedom at all. So my father and my mom, the whole family, being sent to that small place. And during that time, the hard time, according to my father, he used to tell us the story. Yeah. I was born there, and then we managed to come back to the south, which is originally from the south part of Turkestan, Khotan. So we came back and we stayed. And my primary education was done there, but it was not okay because my parents come from a religious background. We're all Muslims, like a Turkic group. They're all Muslims. So there was no possibility, there was no chance, not even 1% chance to educate your child about your religion, about your faith. So then my parents decided that, you know, they were to find a place where I could be educated about freely about my religion, and also to be a person who could stand on his feet in the future. So that was in the 1980s when there was a little bit opening, like, you know, China under Deng Xiaoping, and for economically they started having a new policy. So that gave us a little bit ease to the people of Turkestan, Uyghur people, and they used that opportunity to go for Hajj as part of their religious responsibility, so duty. So with my parents, I traveled in 1985 from Khotan via Pakistan, and they performed Hajj and they returned, but I was placed in an institution. I was about 11 or 12 years old child then. So I joined an institution, I studied, I continued my study. And then that my life in diaspora started from that, because I didn't know that I would be staying outside that long. I mean, which is still happening. Yes. I'm still continuing. I mean, that even instead of going back close to find my family, it took me far away. Now I am now settling in Australia since 2000.
How do you communicate with your family then?
Unfortunately, there's no communication. Okay. That is one of the biggest issues we're facing.
So until now, you don't know what's the situation?
No, we had communication before. Okay. Like, you know, from 85 to 91, 6 years, I had no communication besides that once or twice a year we used to have letters through post. Then afterwards, there was little, again, the Chinese policy always not stable. Like, sometimes they use very hard control, and then sometimes they let loose. So that time, we were able to go and meet with our parents.
It's over 1.6 million kilometers square, right?
It's yeah, 1.82 million. It's quite big.
So it's about 1/6 of China in
That's
size.
That's right.
So it's very big. It plays a very pivotal role during the Silk Road days. Yeah. And if you can go back to the 80s again, I would love for you to share with us, what do you remember, the sights, the sounds, the language? Because it's that part of China that's very different from the other parts of
definitely,
China.
Definitely, yes. Yes, I do remember my childhood, like, you know, being able to play with my friends. It used to be very olden type of cities, like, you know, very olden kind of huts and a house built from...
Like you see in movies.
Yes,
where,
yes, know. Bricks, like, you know, raw bricks. And okay. But still... It was okay because one thing we have to understand is that because we were completely disconnected from the outside world,
okay,
and people did not have any clue that what is life. Mm-hmm. They only knew about their life
surrounding
within
area.
That circle only. Okay. And they are taught things that, okay, you have to go this way, otherwise, no way. Mm-hmm. So that was the mentality. And so even the children who go to school, they're being, like, you know, brainwashed through the history that they taught about China, about Turkestan, it was all distorted version. And never talked about that this land, like in the Turkic people, the Uyghurs who lived here for thousands, that wasn't the true story taught.
Okay.
It was taught that, you know, these people have migrated from the Central Asia or from different parts and settled here as if under the mercy of the Chinese government, people were allowed to stay there.
What was the collective memory of the people of Uyghur, from what your parents and maybe, you know, your relatives when you were small telling you, was the link established all the way back to the Islamic empires in the Ottoman period or in the Turkish era?
Unfortunately, the knowledge of people was very limited because the time has passed, like in between 1924, okay. That's the end of the Ottoman Empire. Yep. And then that was actually two generations passed in between.
Okay.
So they were kept... I mean, completely ignorant about the truth, about the history, as I've said, that it was a distorted version. So people did not have much knowledge, even those small number of people who are intellectuals, who have had some sort of knowledge about history, they could not reveal it, they could not teach anyone, because telling the truth is considered as a crime. So people have to look after themselves or be careful about their survival and their freedom.
So what's the socioeconomic, you know, outlook daily in East Turkestan or Xinjiang?
Yeah, the majority of people of East Turkestan are farmers. About 80% of people are farmers, and the lands are all, like, you know, they just rely on farming, basically, like, you know. And then even farming is not that in the, as I now see in the West, like, you know, one has, like, you know, so
big
many hectares of place that you own, and you do your business, and you have a very good life with the farming. But that farming in Turkestan is very limited.
Subsistence.
So, yes, subsistence. It's the small area is given to you, and you have to work, and that is, and whatever you harvest, whatever you gain from that, it is part of it is taken by the government. You have to give it, all right? Otherwise, you cannot continue in your business. I mean, it's in your life.
What about schools? And
schools have been, you know, very limited. I can give an example. Students were made to bring wood. Like especially in the winter, when we had the like in a very olden style of heating, we used to use coal, wood in the classrooms. Students were put responsible. They used to go and collect and get wood and coal, pieces of coal, carry it in their baskets and bring it to classroom if they want heated, warm classrooms.
Before I go to the break, I want to, because it's a very contentious issue politically.
Yeah.
So, from your point of view, you know, having lived there until your learning age, and from your learning age, never returning, how do you look at the situation in Xinjiang? Because as we move further forward in the world of global village, in the world where communication across the world is happening faster and better, where do you think you see Xinjiang in maybe 5 to 10 years?
If I look at it from the point of just outside as how it looks, like, you know, from outside, or
looking
when you go
in,
and
outside
see,
looking in.
Yes, when you look at it and you see the buildings, the technology and the things that you've completely changed, because it's a completely totally different Turkestan compared to my time, like when I was young. So in terms of buildings, like nice roads and cars, and people seem to be, like, you know, living in a kind of modern modern time.
Okay.
But again, this is only for the Chinese settlers, Han Chinese. Mm-hmm. But the local people, the Uyghurs, are their benefit from this very scarce, very, very little. Mm-hmm. Yes, there were some lucky people that who managed to run their businesses and they got better mm-hmm. In their life. But again, it wasn't stable.
Inclusiveness, yeah, that, justice.
Unfortunately, that was forced. Inclusiveness coming from the Chinese point of view mm-hmm. is that you have to be a Chinese.
Okay. I have to go for the first and only break. But once we are back, I want to go straight to the contentious issues. But more from the perspective is, what do we do? What's the solution? We can talk about the disparities forever. But what's the society of the world to do with this? How can the world mobilize to find a solution, a win-win situation? And we all understand the issue of Muslim minorities around the world shares the same story, where they don't get included in socio-economic mobility, where they don't get to enjoy the full rights of being a citizen. For example, in Palestine, we're still talking about the two state or one state or everything else. But at the same time, Gaza is like one whole big prison in the world. Now we are hearing from many quarters, and Turkey has taken the bold step of saying it diplomatically, about camps in East Turkestan or Xinjiang, concentration, internment camps, of course being denied profusely by Beijing. But I want to go there. We will have to have another day for the representative of the government of China to come and answer all the discussions here. But through the phone, we'll give about 2 to 3 minutes that's been agreed with the Chinese embassy for them to give their side of the story. After this, the stories behind, actually past the Great Wall of China in East Turkestan or Xinjiang. You are still watching a very special issue, and that issue is a contentious one. It's about the minority of a group of people who call themselves Uyghurs, and they call their area East Turkestan, and it's about 1.8 million square kilometers. And the population statistic also census vary. The Beijing will say it's around 18.
Eight to 10 million
plus the outside one. Yep. But you are saying that it's what,
30 million.
And before I go deeper into the contentious part, I would like to give a chance for the spokesperson, the communication section and public affairs, Mr. Tang from the Chinese embassy, to give his views on Xinjiang, or what is called by my guest tonight as East Turkestan. Mr. Tang, are you on the line?
Yeah, sure. I'm holding on.
Okay, go on. Your views on the issue.
Of course, no problem. Actually, I'm quite sorry for my voice because I kind of caught a cold. Okay. And I'm sorry I cannot make my appearance tonight because I got it for quite a shorter notice.
Yeah.
Okay, I will try my best to keep it simple and clear. Mm-hmm. But although I have to say, recently too many rumors and fake news are flooding on internet, especially social media in Malaysia. Mm. I think everyone knows.
Okay.
Okay. There are some few points about the so-called Xinjiang issue. Mm-hmm. First, I think Xinjiang has been a part of China for the last hundreds of years. The so-called East Turkestan never existed and will never happen in the future. No country, including Malaysia, will tolerate separatism. Okay. Since ancient times, Xinjiang has been the home of many ethnic groups mm-hmm. living together. There are 10 ethnic groups, including Uyghur, with 14 million Muslims in Xinjiang, accounting for 60% of total population there.
Okay.
Second, the Xinjiang issue is not a religious or racial problem. It's an issue of separatism and terrorism. Chinese government have no problems with Islam, Muslims, and Uyghurs. What local government have done in Xinjiang is all about how to maintain stability and development. Okay. I think no one likes to live in a land of chaos and dangers, just like Xinjiang used to be years ago. Back then, I think people in Xinjiang, especially in the southern part of Xinjiang, were undeveloped, uneducated, and lived in extreme poverty. Many people were influenced and brainwashed by the extremism. Some believe if they kill non-Muslims, he will be granted access to heaven. And they actually take actions. Thousands of Han ethnics, even Uyghurs, were killed brutally. I personally know a well-respected Uyghur religious leader was killed by extremists in front of mosque with more than 10 wounds in his body. Third, Xinjiang is enjoying stability and development right now. China's efforts against terrorism combine combating with preventing, and we place preventing, especially education, as priority. It's only when the preventing is well done that the breeding ground of terrorism could be destroyed. We established vocational education and training centers in Xinjiang, teaching the local people common language, law, and vocational skills to help them to find better jobs and get involved in society, so that they would not be poisoned by the extremism. If you are following our embassy's Facebook, you will know I personally visited Xinjiang last month and back with a lot of pictures and videos which are shot by myself using cell phone. Mm-hmm. Actually, when in Xinjiang, once I went for shopping around like, I think, 9 or 10 p.m., I talked with the taxi driver who is a Uyghur. He told me no local person dares to walk in the streets in the evening, and no tourist dares to visit Xinjiang years ago. His salary went down. He hated the extremists who created terror and chaos. But now people can laugh and dance in night markets again. The driver's salary got doubled. I'm happy for him and all people lives in Xinjiang. Who should have strongest voice in this Xinjiang issue? Actually, not those self-claimed Uyghur activists. Here's some data. In the first 11 months of 2018, Xinjiang has attracted almost 150 million tourists, 40% year-on-year increase. And foreign tourists amount to 2.4 million, a 10% plus year-on-year increase. Many people who have visited Xinjiang describe the region like this. Today's Xinjiang is not just beautiful, but also safe and stable. Fourth, I want to ask all of you a question. Do you think the Xinjiang issue, why do you think this Xinjiang issue emerged recently? Do you really believe some countries behind this really cares about Uyghurs? Or they just want to paint something bad for China, or anything can stop or slow China's rise? They want to make China enemy with the Islamic world so they can divide and conquer. Okay. As a matter of fact, China has maintained traditional friendly relations with almost every Islamic country. China has supported Palestine's independence and autonomy. For a long time, China has been a true friend of the larger Islamic world and supported Islamic religious development. I think seeing is believing. You may still have some doubts about what I said, but well, I think my suggestion is to go to Xinjiang. The door to Xinjiang is always open and no limitation at all. We warmly welcome all Malaysians, Muslims, to visit Xinjiang and see by your own eyes. Do not let the rumors and fake news blind your eyes anymore. Last but not least, more good news to share. Our embassy have invited a delegation of journalists from Malaysia to visit Xinjiang next week. Their schedule will include the vocational, education, and training centers. I think it shows our sincerity and openness on this issue. I personally cannot wait to read their reports. These are roughly the basic points I would like to share with you tonight. Once more, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Tang. Hopefully next time when you have the time, you're feeling better, you can come here and explain to us further the points that you make. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Okay. Over to you, Saudara Abdul Salam Alim, but I can only give you about 2 points. I know there's so many things you can say. One, I want you to give your views on the terrorism and separatism movement.
Okay. Terrorism is something, it's a danger to the whole humanity. But the definition of terrorism is something we need to understand. Who is being terrorized? Who is the victim of terrorism now? In Turkestan, all the Uyghurs being the victim of terrorism, which is used against their freedom by a system, by a government, who claims that they are giving freedom to them. What type of freedom they are talking about? What type of terrorism they are talking about? Let me give you an example. Where is my sister? My sister, do you consider my sister, who was a housewife, mm-hmm. she's just looking after her children, she's taken into concentration camp. Does she need her education? On what base?
So from your details and facts, there are camps.
Yes, definitely. Yes, no one can deny it. Mm-hmm. But again, they want to misinterpret it, saying that it's a vocational center where people are education is given to them so that they can become better people, have better opportunity, jobs, everything. Let me just clarify this. When you look at the pictures, and that is like a prison type of buildings where people are only kept one ticket, like one way ticket. They go in, they don't know whether they can come out or not. Mm-hmm. Okay, there are people who have been there for the last 2 years. No sign, no sign of their coming out. From my own immediate family, more than 10 people are in concentration camp. They're my sisters, okay? And there are cases, the witness programs happening all around the world, in Europe, in Turkey. People are talking about asking, where is my father? Where is my mother? Yes, if there is someone who is committing crime, the law is there. We respect the law. Okay. But do you consider every single member, being Uyghur, being a Muslim, mm-hmm. makes a person terrorist?
In the interest of time, of course, you can always come back when you are in KL. We don't want to get caught in the struggle between big superpowers. Yep. China is a big power now, and that's the United States of America. How best do you think countries like Malaysia, Indonesia, Turkey mm-hmm. can help play a better role for the betterment of this issue?
Very simple. As human beings, it's a global, globe. It became a globe that everyone knows what is happening around the world. There must be the transparency that everyone, every citizen, like the citizens of the world, should be given freedom. Mm-hmm. Freedom of religion, freedom of practice on their culture, freedom of use on their language. But when you look at our situation, now all those three big elements of survival or being a person belonging to a certain group or a nation has been taken away from us. Mm-hmm. People are unable to practice their religion. And there are mosques being demolished for the last couple of years.
So the objective is not to have an independent, separate country, but it's respect the autonomy that has been given.
I mean, because they haven't actually shown the true the picture of autonomy. Okay. They failed.
Okay.
So when they are failing for the last, since 1956, mm-hmm. Xinjiang is known that Uyghur Autonomous Region. Yeah. But what is the autonomy? When people are unable to speak mm-hmm. about their rights.
Yes.
Okay. So mm-hmm. now they are saying, okay, these people are separate. We are talking about regaining our things which belong to us. As a nation, we want to be respected, we want to be recognized, we want to be free to speak our language, dress up the way we want to dress up, because when you look at the children who go to schools now, they are forced to wear like a Chinese traditional clothing, mm-hmm. which even Han Chinese don't wear now. They don't allow their children to wear it, but our people are forced to accept those kind of things.
And the world have to do this justice.
Definitely.
Thank you so
yes.
much for making time to
Thank
be
you.
Here.
Thank you, pleasure.
We tried to give both sides of the story, but in the days of new Malaysia, diversity and plurality must be the discourse of the day, and you have to make your own thinking, fact-checking, verification on all the matters that have been presented. But we will continue. No one discussion can solve every single problem that we have, but at least the day we're still talking is the day we do not stop and fight. So that is going to be the end for this discussion. Terima kasih banyak. Thank you so much. Terima kasih banyak kepada anda. Hantarkan pandangan anda sendiri kepada pelbagai platform yang ada di Astro Wani. Dan insyaAllah kita akan jumpa lagi. Thank you so much.